And welcome to the program, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KABC. Happy Sunday to all you good people out there. Monday's coming. And I always say this, I'm a TGIM guy. My best day of the week is Monday. I love getting up in the morning. I love getting going. I sometimes think my staff, they just hate me because I always ask that we have an 8 a.m. Monday morning meeting. I've talked about this before, I think, where I start. It's just a great way to start the week, get everyone on the same page, and you got to snap people back out of weekend mode. But don't worry, we're going to do both here. I'm going to start getting you ready for the week, but we're also going to enjoy the weekend a little bit. And part of that is just recapping everything that happened last week. So you're all caught up. You can say, I'm ready to face this next week. I'm all caught up. Now, we had a great show yesterday. And if you didn't catch it, check it out on the podcast, samnation.com. Got all of our podcasts there of all of our past shows. And it really is a good treasure trove. So if you have a domesticated millennial living at home, if you've got that loved one or a friend that perhaps needs a little bit of wisening up, give the gift of enlightenment. Take their iPhone from them. Get it dialed in so they can receive manna from heaven, a.k.a. Sam Nation Show. This program, you know, we do have some success stories, and I get emails all the time now from people who say, look, I hear you. I get it. You make me angry, but I'm getting it. I'm getting it. Well, and that's a good thing. That's what this is about. No participation trophies. That's the main thing. You know, you have to earn your keep in life. You have to earn your keep. Now, well, that's funny. It's funny, right? Because of that Oberlin College thing. Did you read that, Robbie? This is Lena Dunham's alma mater. You know, a crazy left-wing chick that, you know, the girls star and writer, HBO, yeah. We've talked about her college before. Remember, these are the kids that they're complaining about their banh mi being soggy, and banh mi being a Vietnamese dish. And I guess the problem is that the banh mi is soggy and it's a low quality. And their argument, their petition to the school back then, Robbie? Talked about how it was cultural appropriation. You know, that whoever's working in the cafeteria, they're not Hispanic, so they can't make banh mi. Are you kidding me? So what do you do with all these McDonald's workers who are Hispanic making hamburgers? That's cultural appropriation. But don't worry, there's a solution for that. We'll get there in a minute. What else did Oberlin call? I mean, this place makes UC schools look like enlightened institutions. They wanted blacks to have safe only spaces. Didn't we protest for years against segregation? A lot of people fought an honorable fight to integrate schools, and these clowns here wanted separate. I mean, this is terrible. And then they also wanted, and why is it always about race for them? They're hung up on this. I think we talked about how Oberlin wanted a minimum wage to be paid, but only to black students that protested. Minimum wage paid to protesting students, but only those who are black. If it doesn't make any sense to you, don't worry. Don't worry about it. It doesn't make any sense to me either. These people are idiots. So the latest is a petition signed by 1,300 students at Oberlin College demanding that the school get rid of any grade below a C. And they also want, as if that weren't crazy enough, they want to replace essay midterms with a conversation with their professor. Now this, you know, I was a C student. I'm very grateful that they had C's where I went to school because I earned my C's fair and square. And, you know, in law school, I have to tell you this, there's no such thing as grade inflation. There's a bell curve. You know, they only give out so many F's and they have to give out, I think, two failing grades. and they can only give out two top grades. I mean, it depends on how many students are in the class. And there's a statistical model that pushes grade distributions towards the center. So most people in the class get C's. A handful of people get B's. One or two, maybe three people get an A. And then the same thing happens at the bottom end. One or two people fail. And then there's a handful of people that get D's. That's how, I mean, that's a great, that's a proper grade distribution. And what does that grade distribution do? Well, it pushes people. It motivates students to get up and away from mediocrity. If you assume that this gravitational pull toward the center of the bell curve can best be repelled by one of two things, not doing a single thing, not studying or preparing and just taking the F, or by working really hard so that you're not just doing good work, but you're doing better work than 90% of your class in order to get that B plus or above. And I kind of submit to you that that's what life is about, isn't it? I mean, we don't really reward mediocrity, do we? Well, some are arguing that we should, and we're going to talk about that. So by removing any lower grades, by removing any failing grades, come on. I mean, what motivation would you have to work hard, to learn? It's almost as if these up-and-coming millennials are practicing socialism with their grades, where everyone gets a loaf of bread and a house to live in and a paycheck from the government, no matter what. And we all know that that model works, don't we? So let me tell you, I hope Oberlin College has the good sense to quash this nonsense. I have doubts about it, but I think that they may. And I'll tell you, it's just, this is a disaster if this is applied. And this grade inflation stuff goes back. If you think, first of all, grade inflation is real. It's 100% real in undergraduate campuses. And it originates, this is a fairly interesting point for those of you who are a little bit older and were alive and well in the 60s, perhaps in school. You'll remember that you could receive a deferment to the Vietnam conflict if you were enrolled in school. And you had to, in order to maintain your enrollment, you had a what? You have passing grades. You had to pass your classes. And eventually what happens if you don't pass your classes? Well, you get kicked out of school and presto, off you go to the jungles of Vietnam. Now, you may imagine that many of the professors that are alive today that are at such schools like Oberlin or UC Berkeley or UC Santa Cruz or UC whatever were products of this era. They were in grad school during this time. And they were people who maybe had friends who, as grad students, were being kicked out of graduate programs and sent packing. And then they also witnessed many professors who, during this time, would protest the war by saving students, by giving failing students C grades. In fact, in many cases, these professors were known to round up. They just said, why the hell not? Just give them a B. And it was a widespread practice. This is documented. It was a widespread practice that in this era, professors would pass students simply because they didn't want them to be sent to Vietnam. And this cultural sort of take on grades, where a grade wasn't that important, it was staying in the school and kind of continuing through the process, and it was the whole student is, you know, nothing really to do with their abilities. Advancing nincompoops through college that now gives birth to this whole movement of no grades. And it's interesting when you look at, if you look at grade inflation, you know, in Harvard, you think, Harvard, what a great school. Now, it's pretty hard to get into Harvard. If you've got a kid in high school, statistically speaking, their chances of getting into an Ivy League is next to nil. Okay? That's the truth. I mean, it helps if they're 8 feet tall and know how to hold a basketball. But beyond that, you're just not getting, it's statistically not happening. But I'll tell you what isn't happening. I'll tell you what is happening. Once you get into that school, you're not getting kicked out. You're not. Because, you know, the most common grade awarded in Harvard is a B. I mean, overwhelmingly. Students are just given A's and B's. They're not even giving out C's. It's like Oberlin, but one step above. And the crazy thing is without the threat of a C, a D, or an F, what kind of quality are these schools pumping out? What are they sending out? Well, they're sending out robots. That's what they're doing. I mean, people are just spewing out what the teacher wants to hear, who are checking the boxes, who aren't necessarily doing anything exceptional. I mean, there's no motivation. There's no incentive to be exceptional. As a matter of fact, this show, this program, gives fewer participation trophies than Harvard does. And that's what it is. In a school that gives no D's, what's a pass-fail in a class? You take the class, you're guaranteed to pass it, right? It's a participation trophy. What a load of crock. Well, where else are there robots? You heard about the McDonald's robots? You heard about this? Because coming soon to a McDonald's near you is a robot. And I'm going to tell you why it's a good thing. Sam Brzozowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KABC.
This is Sweet James. I listen to Sam Nation.
And we're back. Okay, so we've talked about these minimum wage. I mean, Robbie, when was it? Was it last week that we talked about it? Was it on Sunday that we talked about it? So exactly a week ago today, we talked about the minimum wage. And if you missed it, download the podcast, samnation.com. We have a lot of good stuff there. But download the segment and listen to it, because I really broke down what it is, why the minimum wage certainly is nonsense on a federal scale, and why I actually think it's even just total crap on a local scale. And the issue here is, you know, Bernie is beating the fight for 15 drum, right? This is now a hashtag. Is that right? I bet it's trending on Facebook, because, you know, they, you know, anyway. Nothing like a bunch of liberals, you know, overpaid liberals sitting in a beautiful place in San Francisco going, yes, I think more people should be paid more money. Yes, I'm guilty about the fact that I make $150,000 a year clicking a mouse. Yes, I don't understand anything about the economy, but I'm going to alter the way people think so I can make a better world. The arrogance of it all. So now Bernie thinks, and again, the whole fight for 15 movement, all these stupid people who need to take a basic econ class are all fighting for a minimum wage. And I get into it again on the program last week on Sunday, and I talk about how $15 in downtown San Francisco is not the same thing as $15 in Alpharetta, Georgia, or Nacogdoches, Texas. It's not the same thing. Just like it's not the same thing that raising the requirement for overtime pay from $24,000 to $48,000 is something that ought to be done on a national level, because $48,000 a year in Nacogdoches, Texas is literally a king's ransom. You can live pretty dang well on that. Try living on $48,000 a year in San Francisco. Yeah, not going to happen. You're going to be living in a shoebox. And if you think I'm kidding, the internet is full of stories of people living in shoeboxes in San Francisco. I think there's at least every quarter I see a story about some little tiny shanty building that's in between two high rises, you know, and it's all of 700 square feet and it's selling for 1.2 million or something nuts. You are not, you cannot afford to live off that. And so why is that relevant? You can't in Washington make a decision that is the same for such diverse, economically diverse areas. Can't. And that's what Washington does all the time. They certainly care about every other kind of diversity, but they forget that we're an economically diverse country and that a dollar goes further or not as far, depending on where you live. So I turn on the TV one morning, I'm getting ready, and I see, I got the morning news on, and I'm brushing my teeth. This is always dangerous, I'm going to tell you this, because I get angry, and then I want to shout at the television. And shouting at the television, I found out, with a mouthful of toothpaste is not advisable. So I'm brushing my teeth, I've got my Sonicare in, I'm trying to remove all these I'm getting ahead of myself here. Coffee, I don't smoke. But coffee, my gosh, fueling myself on the weekends here, trying to get my energy up for you guys. And I see this thing come up on of the TV about these protests in Illinois outside of McDonald's headquarters. And the protest is all about the minimum wage. And it's the fight for $15 an hour protest. And the two takeaways, right? First of all, I look at all these people on TV and I said, you idiots, you are so stupid. You are out here protesting for the destruction of your own jobs. It's the first thing I think about. And the second thing I think about is I'm looking at the TV and I'm going, look at all these people with their Black Lives Matter t-shirts. There's got to be a story here. I mean, what's up with this Black Lives nonsense? How does this all tie together? Okay, I mean, last time I checked, it wasn't, the two I didn't think necessarily, I didn't realize that they're related, but they are, and I'm going to explain it to you. But let's first start with the first thing I mentioned, which is, after they show the protest, they've got the former CEO of McDonald's, and this guy's name is Ed Renzi. He's the ex-president and CEO of McDonald's, and this guy just laid it out. He laid it out better than I could have. And it's this simple, folks. He said, these people are protesting their way from a low wage to no wage. And that is it. Okay? We looked at him in Forbes. He does a similar review. I think this was on Fox News. But he on Bill Hemmer's show, but he did the same breakdown, but in greater detail for Forbes. And what he says is these protesters are really demonstrating for an acceleration of the date at which their jobs disappear to a machine. And now, why is this? He talks about a very basic economic principle, and that is that price alters demand. A change in price changes the demand. It could be a good, it can be a service. Now, let me give you an example. Tell me or think of something that you like, that you buy on a regular basis. Let's say it's Starbucks. I like Starbucks, so maybe you like Starbucks. And maybe that favorite coffee blended mocha frappuccino drink that you get is $3. Now, let me ask you something. Are you still going to buy as many of those super mocha frappuccino cappuccinos if that product now costs a dollar more? Are you? What about $2? See, this is an important discussion. Only you can answer that. But economically, it has been proven, it's statistically a fact, that as a good becomes more expensive generally, especially if it's a good that is sold in bulk, well, not in bulk, but in volume, in high volume, the higher it goes up in price, guess what? Demand for it goes down because fewer and fewer people can afford it. Let's say you get that drink that's $3, now goes up to $4. You get that drink before the price change. You get it 5 times a week. You know, you still like that drink, right? So maybe now you go, I'm just going to get it 4 days a week. And suddenly demand drops. That's what? That's a 20% drop in your consumption of that good. And if you think you're alone, you're not. The nature of a marketplace is that it's not just isolated. So what this guy, what Renzi is saying is he now is talking about the robot revolution, which is automation in food service. The whole premise of the, this is in California, this is very, very current. The idea of paying food service workers $15 an hour is ludicrous. Now, first of all, in service areas, like in a restaurant, you pay, there's tipping. Now, I realize there's no tipping in McDonald's, and I'll talk about that in a minute, but there's tipping. So the whole premise, I mean, there are some states where servers are exempt from minimum wage laws because it's widely known that they get a substantial income on their tips. But the McDonald's employees, the burger costs a certain amount of money. And you're serving a demographic that your sales are going to go down if the cost of that good goes up. And they figured it out. They've got their wages set. It is what it is. And any changes to it is going to affect it. Remember how we talked about the Walmart in Chinatown? The Walmart in Chinatown left because of minimum wage. The minimum wage went up, and no longer could that Chinatown Walmart operate. And we talk about it last week, and we explain why. Now, what you have here is McDonald's is going to figure out a way to keep their costs in line to where they know that they can still sell their product. And the answer to it is, fire that fat, lazy SOB that's out there protesting in front of my headquarters with this Black Lives Matter t-shirt. That fat idiot was getting it wrong half the time anyway. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I've been to McDonald's. Not necessarily the spirit of competence behind the counter. And the robot, the robot's going to break down, but you don't have to pay the robot overtime. You don't have to pay the robot. You have to give the robot meal breaks and rest breaks and cigarette breaks and potty breaks. You don't have to. The robot's not going to go out and protest. At least not for now. that's coming. So the thing is, I look at these protesters out there. And on that first issue where my first reaction viscerally is you're protesting your way out of a job. I think, well, yeah. You're so dumb you don't even get it. And if you are a liberal, if you think that you are doing people a favor, you are helping poverty by raising the minimum wage, I submit to you that you are doing the exact opposite. Because the number of people that will be booted from low-end jobs. Hey, you know what? It's not my job that's going to be handled by a robot. Maybe Robbie. Maybe we'll replace Robbie with a robot. No, it's not. It's going to be menial labor. And these menial jobs are entry-level jobs from which people grow and move up and eventually, well, some people stay in them, but it's still a job. Thank goodness they've got a job. And it's those jobs that if they disappear, where do you start from? Where do you start from? And the thing is it affects people. It affects people who are on the low end of the income scale. The very people you think you're helping. So after this short little break, I'm going to explain to you how Black Lives Matter fit in all of this. And it's scary. It is scary. Back after this. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KABC.
This is Sweet James Bergener. I listen to Sam Nation.
And welcome back to the program. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KABC. And I'll tell you, Imagine, I mean, just imagine you are there, you're going through the drive-thru, and, you know, in you're going through the drive-thru at McDonald's, and all of a sudden there's a robot at the window. You're not even talking to a real person, it's a robot. And it's something like going on Star Tours. At Star Tours at Disneyland. And this robot starts talking, you're so shocked and surprised, you slow down. The person behind you sees it too, they don't slow down, they slam right into you, bam, car accident right there in front of the robot. No, I don't think the robot can be a witness, which is a problem, because now there's going to be some he said, she said, they're going to go back and forth, you're going to have to talk to your insurance company, you're going to have to deal with all that. No! No, you're not going to deal with it, because you're smart. You're going to do what smart people do, and that is, you're going to call attorney James Bergner. Sweet James. He knows how to cut through the crap. He's going to take care of everything for you. Don't call the insurance company and try to work it out with them. It's not a good deal. It's not. They only have their interest at heart. They don't even care about their own insured. They're not going to do what they need to do to protect their insured. They just want to save money. That's all it is. And so what you need is you need somebody on your side fighting for you. And that person is James. James Bergner. You can reach him at 1-800-881-2021. 1-800-881-2021. Don't wait. Don't put it off. If you or of a loved one have an injury, personal injury, talk to Sweet James. And you can also visit him, sweetjames.com. All right. So now, these robots are real. It's not fantasy land. I mean, they're starting to be installed in restaurants. And they can do simple things. That's the reality of it. They can fry French fries, for example. I mean, the idea that you need a person standing there tending to a boiling vat of oil, monitoring French fries, when it's a simple formula, the whole thing's done on a timer anyway. The McDonald's is an example, a perfect example, where automation can take over a bunch of different tasks. So instead of that store having, I don't know, 30 employees who work in three different shifts, you now have a store that maybe can be run by as little as five people, maybe as low as three. And the thing is, this is just the thing I always throw out to people who talk about this whole concept of minimum wage. I go, what, tell me please, what is someone babysitting, boiling French fries worth? What is that? I mean, what is that skill set worth? Are you really saying that the most menial job like that, that the baseline for that is $15 an hour? It's absurd. But anyway, the whole Black Lives protest, that's hashtag Black Lives Matter, and the whole fight for $15 an hour in minimum wage, these protests have joined arms. They have linked up. They've done so really quietly. And I thought about this, and there's some historical background to this. And I think, well, let's first kind of talk about what's going on. You know, all across college campuses, you've got these protests. And they're on one hand, they're protesting racial injustice. But on the other hand, they're protesting social and economic injustice as well. And we've got if you've got a millennial that's off at school and you're wondering what they're up to, you know, this is not the place to tune in, because you're not going to like what you're hearing. You are not going to like where your hard-earned tuition dollars are being sent off to. So do we have that recording here, Robbie, of this protest? And this is one of these, this is a Black Lives Matter protest, but listen to it, because it's got some overtly social and economic overtones to it. Roll the tape.
It is our duty to fight.
It is our duty to fight.
It is our duty to win.
It is our duty to win.
We have nothing to lose but our chains.
We have nothing to lose but our chains.
Yeah, so, okay, so there we go. So now what is that? What are they shouting here? No, you don't know? These are This isn't anything original, by the way. These people did not come up with some catchy lines. This is none other than refried Marxism. They just opened a stale can of Marxist doctrine, threw it in a little frying pan, and are heating it up and trying to pretend and serving it to us like it's something new. It's not. Well, there's another protest. I don't think we have this clip, do we? We don't have this one. But we have, there's another clip, and I'll tell you about the irony in a minute, but there's another clip that says, workers of the world unite. And again, this is at a Black Lives Matter deal. You have nothing to lose but your chains. And if this particular protest, again, is being led by a student at a school, and his name is Jonathan Butler. Now, he's a black student, and interestingly enough, though, he is the son of a multi-millionaire. The dad, is the vice president of Union Railroad, and he's got like a $20 million net worth. And his kid is off at school talking about, what is this, chains? Oppression? I mean, I was looking at the video, and Robbie and I were snickering because we'd never seen so many well-dressed, oppressed people in our lives. These kids are all wearing designer clothes and sitting in a beautiful auditorium at an expensive private school, you know, shouting all about how oppressed they are. Is there anything more hypocritical? But I, you know, this whole, this Black Lives Matter protest movement has had socialist overtones to the beginning. How far back? I always grew up in a home. My parents were pretty blunt. They didn't subscribe to any political correctness. And they talked, I would always, you know, I'd ask about social injustice in America. And certainly there have been some valid protests along the years. But it's interesting to see that even a great civil rights icon like Martin Luther King Jr. had some very interesting notions about democracy and socialism. So here's a quote, and I got a lot of them here. If you look it up, it's an interesting thing and it's a good read. So Martin Luther King says, and one day we must ask the question, why are there 40 million poor people in America? And when you ask that question, you're raising questions about the economic system, about a broader distribution of wealth. When you ask that question, you begin to question the capitalistic economy. The capitalistic economy. What else does he say? We must recognize that we can't solve our problem now until there is a radical redistribution of economic and political power. This means a revolution of values and other things. We must now see that the evils of racism, economic exploitation, and militarism are all tied together. And he adds, the whole structure of American life must be changed. This is May 1967. Almost next year will be 50 years. This is 50 years ago. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, if you've attended a Bernie rally, it ought to. If you've listened to Elizabeth Pocahontas Warren, it ought to be familiar. Because leftist agitators in this country have clung to this idea that racial inequality and economic inequality go hand in hand. And they foolishly suppose, and they have many of you convinced, they've got you convinced, right, that the way you're going to lift up and help the Black Lives people to help racial inequality, bump up the minimum wage. Let's join hands. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, you could not pick stranger bedfellows, because raising the minimum wage will do anything but help lower income people. I give you one example. I mentioned you raise the minimum wage. If the price of a good has to stay the same, what do you do? What happens? Well, you've got the price of the good either has to go up or you've got to reduce your costs somehow. And if the price of the good goes up, the consumption of that good goes down, the company makes less money, it's just not going to work. So what's going to happen is there will be unemployed people. There will be unemployed people. And these unemployed, now, if you are starting out, where do you start out? You start out at the bottom of the ladder. And that is especially true if you are poor, if your parents are not connected, if your parents do not value education. In other words, if you are living in the ghetto, you will start at the bottom rung. But America is a place, and I realize that this is a, now this macroaggression alert, America is a land of opportunity where people have, do, and will move up from the bottom rung up and beyond. It is possible. It is doable. And you do it by showing how hard you can work and you build skill upon skill upon skill. You can work your way up. But the reality is when you take away the bottom rung, when you take away the bottom rung, what happens? It doesn't affect the rich people. It doesn't. Because the rich, they're going to always find a bottom rung somewhere for their kid. And that bottom rung really isn't going to be a bottom rung now, is it? And the middle class, they're going to find a bottom rung for their kids. And it's not necessarily going to be a bottom rung. And so what do you got? The poor. And this is the dirty truth of it. The biggest losers in all of this will be the uneducated poor, many of whom happen to be minorities. And so if I were Black Lives Matter, I would distance myself so far away from these kooks advocating for the minimum wage. I would run for the hills. All right. I'll tell you why Hillary Clinton here has got I'll tell you why Hillary Clinton has getting some very bad and scary advice on the economy and how this ties into the minimum wage. Back after this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC.
This is Sweet James Bergener. I listen to Sam Nation every weekend.
And welcome back to the program. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC. This is the home to outside the Beltway patriots, to people with common sense, fighting the millennial melees one conversion at a time. No participation trophies given. That's right. No participation trophies given. In fact, producer Robbie has offered to exchange trophies. It's a trophy buyback. And he promises to give you exactly what they are worth, which is, by the way, not a whole lot. Hey, Rob, before I forget about this, do you have an update for me on your Canadian dating deal? What was that site called again? So the Maple Match, right? So we talked about this a couple weeks back. And again, just pull out the podcast. It was pretty funny. Apparently, there's this website that is devoted entirely to people, millennials mostly, who cannot handle the idea of a Trump presidency and are looking to relocate to Canada. But in an effort to make it easy, because, of course, millennials are corner cutters and they have to have it easy, the site does what? It matches displaced millennials in America with similarly leaning millennials in Canada who might possibly be able to provide a marriage, a relationship, love, and thereby allow for an easier kind of Canadian domicile. Is that, am I explaining that right? Okay. And so producer Robbie took one for the team and he applied and he posted up his, I loved your bio. Is that up on the site? Yeah, it's up on the site. Check it out, samnation.com. So Robbie posted up his bio, which is awesome. And I know many of you eligible ladies may want to read it, especially if you're Canadian. Now, did you hear back from them? Oh, it's not. So the app isn't running yet, but they asked to confirm your email, huh? Okay, so you're hot on the trail. You'll have some news for us maybe next week, or if maybe they'll never launch. Right, do we even know who's behind this whole effort? It's probably some kid living at home. Yeah, well, that's right. It might be some millennial parents, or parents of millennials, I should say, who want to boot their kids out of the house. What better way than to send them to Canada? You read about this, about how millennials are more likely to live at home than any other young adult group in American history. Kind of going back, this goes back historically, that 29% live with their parents. Oh, wait, it's 35. You're right. 35 are staying with mom and dad. And just 28% of them are living with a significant other. This is insanity. I guess the number has been steadily going up since about 1960 when the numbers peaked. It looked like 62% back then. 62% were living with a spouse or partner, not at home with mom and dad. And now that number has gone up substantially, several percentage points. 35%. 35%. So one in three of millennials, more than one in three, are just a failure to launch. So I could see how so Robbie's right. You know, the parents are ready to send these kids off, even if it means they're getting naturalized in Canada. So, you know, so here's the scoop with all this nonsense about the minimum wage and who it affects. You know, we were talking about you raise the minimum wage and it affects the poor. It does, because it takes away entry-level positions. And it's true. People of certain economic stature, middle class, upper middle class, wealthy people, give their kids, right? They're the next generation. They give them a good springboard from which to launch into their careers. And you know this, you know people who, you know, because let's say you've got a, you know, let's say you're middle class and you got a kid and you go, hey, this kid needs a job. You've got a network of people that you know that you can pimp your kid out to them. And I'm not talking in the Jeffrey Epstein kind of way. We talked about that yesterday on the show. Clinton's sex pervert friend, different kind of pimp out. And we're talking, you say, hey, my kid's looking for work. You got anything? You know anybody? There's a network. But when you are poor, when you have no springboard, you are looking to help wanted ads and you're showing up and you're saying, hey, I am willing to take this job. I accept the low wage. I want to move up. I will prove myself. And that's what happens. And now here's the part of the story that nobody wants to talk about. Not everyone has a life that is made fit for a feel-good movie. What do I mean by this? There are people who will stay mediocre. And we cannot, just like with grade inflation that we talked about earlier, where you hand out C's willy-nilly to any student that comes along and there are no D's and no F's. You cannot reward mediocrity with anything but mediocre wages. You can't. The wage has to fit the service that's being performed. The service has a certain value. And you can't do anything about that. And the minute you begin tinkering with it, and this is what it really is. This is economic engineering. You tinker with the cost structure of goods by raising minimum wage. You risk throwing the whole economy out of balance. Now, if you're not already fearful slightly of what could happen if hell freezes over and Hillary becomes president of the United States, this should give you added pause. In my stack of stuff, Clinton advisor and Nobel Prize winning economist endorses Venezuelan socialism. Now, just listen, now you can't even make this up. Okay, so you got Venezuela, who, by the way, if you don't know this, I mean, they're sitting on one of the world's largest reserves of oil. Some estimate it larger than that contained in Saudi Arabia. Think about that. Now, you know what they did, of course, right? They came in, they had a revolution. And it was just like that revolution that Martin Luther King was talking about, wasn't it? Where was that quote? Talking about revolution. Talking about redoing social order. Well, here it is. Can't solve our problems now until there's a radical redistribution of economic and political power. Means a revolution of values. See the evils of racism, economic exploitation, all tied together. The whole structure has to be changed. Well, okay. Let's find an example of that. Oh, presto, Venezuela. What did they do there? Well, I'll tell you. They had a Western-style democracy. Everything was going well. That capitalist system, you know, they had foreign companies investing dollars. You had a lot of companies like Shell, like BP, that ran the oil industry there. They did. They ran it. I mean, they paid massive leases back to the government, but they had these rigs and they had these oil refineries. They were pulling oil, extracting oil, and they were refining it and shipping it all over the world. And it wasn't just the leases that were benefiting Venezuela. Other stuff too, right? All those employees that lived locally, they weren't spending any money there, were they? Pfft, of course they were. They were putting money right back into the economy, buying homes, spending money on goods. Okay. What else were they doing? They're all paying taxes. Okay. So here they are. Here's, you know, and I can't discuss the whole problem with Venezuela, but I can give you a slice of it. So lo and behold, a crazy man named Hugo Chavez, who doesn't sound that much different, sadly, from the great icon, revered civil rights leader, Martin Luther King, in his socialist rhetoric. What does he say? He comes in, seizes power, and begins to actually do some of the things that our friends on the left advocate and have advocated for years. And one of the things, first things that he does is he starts to confiscate private property, including these oil refineries. He just takes them away. Takes them. Says, Shell, you're done. BP, you're done. Out. And the state takes it over. Well, what happens? There's no competition. The state runs it into the ground. And they're kind of making money. They're limping along. And then what happens? Oh, well, the price of oil drops through the floor and they can't even cut it. And so now you've got a country that is sitting on more oil than Saudi Arabia. And what? They're rationing electricity. People are getting trampled in the streets. There's a stampede every time they announce that they're selling toilet paper at the market. Yes. There is not enough toilet paper. Why? It's simple, because you slowly start to nationalize all these companies. There's no competition. Every person's a state employee. Every person's guaranteed a job. There's no mediocrity. There's no losers. There's all mediocrity. Because the minute you take away the incentive, you can't. The minute the state takes over the whole economy and they guarantee everyone a job, they're really guaranteeing that there are no dropouts. And that is what this whole liberal fantasy and communist socialist fantasy is all about. It guarantees that there are no losers in society. And you can't do that, because the fear of losing out and losing in society and dropping out of society is what propels people to excel and succeed. And without that, America is not America. And that model brings more success, more wealth, more mobility to the poor than any other liberal fantasy program there is. And that's the word. Now, follow us, please. If you want more of my rants, Twitter, Sam Nation Show, at Sam Nation Show. Also, Instagram, got some funny stuff up on there all the time. Sam Nation, at Sam Nation. And then, of course, the website, podcast. If you missed any part of the show, please download it. Get it all set up on your iPhone, on your Android, whatever it is. Take me anywhere and everywhere with you. I want to go! SamNation.com. Great to talk to you. See you here next week, 3 p.m. Saturday on Talk Radio 790 KABC.